June 5, 2021, it's the Walk for Pedro Show. Pedro Show. Happy Saturday. Started off with John Coltrane, By the Numbers. You know, if it's John Coltrane, it's anything By the Numbers. But, you know, he's having some fun. It's 1958, year after he quit dope. So, or maybe that's when they put it out, right? It's Prestige. Once he started getting known, all his recordings as a side mouse and shit got put out. And then we had Pathetics. Interesting spelling. I love that. Hypocrite. Another interesting spell. And Mick Goldwater, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, Brother Mick. And we got to thank Brother Grux for the connect. Yet another one. Thank you so much. Now, I want to explore your journey through music, Mick. Please bring your earliest musical memory, recollection, or whatever. Remember, it's a Walk for Pedro show. There's no hard questions and no wrong answers.
I think probably the thing I always think about that influenced me was listening to, my dad bought a new hi-fi system, and listening that with headphones to my sister's copy of Masters of Reality.
Black Sabbath.
Yeah, and when I was like 7 years old, and just really deeply listening to it.
Oh, I remember when that record came out, this cat who turned me on to it, Dennis Alba, he had painted, this was something, it's early 70s, right? So, painted his whole room black, right? So the posters with the ultraviolet light, you know.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And
I
then
remember.
The cover's kind of like that.
Well, I remember the curious thing was that my sister didn't smoke cigarettes, but there was a mysterious burn mark on the
Mota.
Record cover.
La Mota.
But I remember really liking the instrumental tracks on the record.
Oh, those little ones like Embryo and Orchid.
Yeah. Just really kind of getting into those, and then I was kind of critical of the record too. I thought that
Ozzy
would do those. Oh yeah, like why does he have to do that?
Did you ever see him live? You know, he was like a cheerleader. He didn't stand in the middle like most singers. It was the guitar man's band. He would clap for solos and shit. He was like a cheerleader. I think he was a roadie guy who got asked to sing. And you know, Geezer wrote the words. But I thought it was recorded too small. But I love the composition, especially In the Void. That's a
yeah, journey. Yeah. That's,
and
that's,
the drumming.
That's the one that really sticks in my mind.
The Bill Ward drumming.
I think that kind of influenced me that I realized that, okay, it doesn't just have to be, you know, bass, drums, guitar, but, you know, you could do some electronic thing. I think that's the takeaway. I think I left an impression my whole life.
Children of the Grave, it sounds like somebody's running next to a picket fence with a stick.
Yeah, there's so many little things on there. I have to listen to that again.
Yeah, and remember, to get the voice for... Oh, no, that's Paranoid. To get the Iron Man voice, you have to sing through a fan. The intro one on that record's got the coffin for Sweet Leaf.
Right.
That's probably why your sister did that. Now, the pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments, Mick? Because I know you end up on bass. So, Geezer, is he an influence on you?
You know what? I think I was like, you know, when you get into junior high, you meet, you know, you get to meet so many more people versus being in elementary school. Then when in seventh grade, I met some kids who, you know, became friends. And this one kid goes, yeah, I started playing. You know, you meet all these kids. Everybody wants to play guitar. Then this one guy, he was.
When you say that, Mick, you mean nobody wants to rock the bass, right? That's what you're saying. Everyone wants to be on lead guitar.
Everybody wanted to be on lead guitar, and then I met this friend who was a bass player, and I went over to his house, and his dad bought him actually like a used P bass, and it was like a 70, probably like a mid-70s, early 70s, and it was all like a maple neck, natural body, and I would just hold that thing and just like look over every nook and cranny of that thing and just completely mesmerized by it. That precision bass.
Did he have an amp?
Yeah, I think he had. His dad bought him this like a 215 like Sun cabinet, and maybe he had like a matching Sun tube head too.
Coliseum or something. John Edwards used those for a little bit. But what about the pad you grew up in? Besides your sister's Black Sabbath record, was there any? Because I learned from Michael yesterday, record turntables are instruments also. But was there some musical instruments in your pad?
No, my dad, no, not at all. Actually, there was, my dad was like kind of a tinkerer, and he got a used player piano that he was trying to repair. So I'd kind of goof around with that with him. That was kind of interesting.
Well, that's Michael. Michael's pop worked on him too, he said.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't catch that.
Parallel universe.
Yeah, that's funny.
Because yeah, I was talking to him about not just player piano, but they had whole fucking bands in those, some of those things. Like drum sets.
Oh, yeah,
and shit.
Like the band organ type one. Or they have a little like snare drum.
Yeah, and right. And it's all run by holes in paper scrolls. You know, like the way some dudes do gigs for laptop bands, right?
Yeah, you know, there's a kind of a contemporary guy who does player piano, but he kind of makes music that would be piano music that would be completely impossible for a human to play.
Oh yeah, like only like kick only drum a player. Kick drum beats with drum machines, right?
Yeah, well, it's just like, you know, a cacophony. It sounds like four people playing the piano at once.
No, but some of these kick drum patterns, right? You can...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
256 notes and shit like that, you know. So, what about school? Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
No, in elementary school, I took... You know, I want to play an instrument. And then, for some reason, I was attracted to the cornet, and then I took an aptitude test, because they only had a certain amount that they could give out free to the kids, and then if you wanted to be in the band and you didn't pass the aptitude test, you would have to go rent your own. But I scored good enough to get a school instrument.
Now, you learn to read and that kind of shit? Were you marching at the football games?
No, it was only in elementary school did I play an instrument. Then after that, it kind of took a hiatus. And then,
until you had that bass in your hands.
Yeah, getting that bass in my hands. Then I got a hold of an old mid-60s Epiphone bass, and then I end up making my own bass. And
some of those are really good, man. There was one with like a Batman headstock. It was just like a Thunderbird in the mid-60s.
This one had the two on each side kind of headstock, and I can't remember if it was long scale or not. It seemed pretty compact. And
They had both.
Yeah. But then I end up making my own bass for the Pathetics.
Wow, how?
When you're young, you just kind of wheel and deal, and people have like random parts laying around, and you know.
Yeah, and yeah, but John Entwistle and his father built his first bass, but that he had help. I think Guitar Man to Queen was the same thing. His daddy helped him, but you went and you built your fucking own. How old were you?
I was probably like 13, I think. But it was a bunch of like random parts. It was like a silver tone, like a 60s silver tone, like semi hollow body, single cutaway guitar body that had a big crack in it.
Oh, so you took parts. You salvaged parts from other guitars.
Yeah. And then I got, somebody gave me like a Magnum bass neck that I had to grind down to fit it into the slot. And it was kind of crooked a little bit. Yeah. But it played so good. Then I took a trapeze tailpiece from an acoustic guitar and drilled four holes in it so the strings could be mounted. And then I kind of made my own bridge. And then I had like an old 60s pickup that was like a really thin pickup that would kind of just screw right on top of the body. And then I just went straight to an output jack. I didn't have any.
What about amp?
Amp, or finally, somehow I scrounged up some money for this kid who, I think he was a year or two older than me.
Yeah.
And he, this is like in high school now, and he, he was in his rock band, and then he classic, you know, got his girlfriend pregnant in senior high school, and then had to, you know, quit playing music. And I got this one of those PV Mark III amps, you know, that has like two channels with a zillion knobs and graphic EQ on them.
I remember a little later, I had about 400, which was a 300 watt rock to 215 bottom. You know, you out of the recycler, right, when you first... So did you end up playing with guys with this setup, with this self-made?
Oh, thing? Yeah, because, you know, because what I quickly realized is that being a bass player, and then down the street, I lived in Michigan, you know, you have basements. So you could just like jam all year long.
Basement band.
Basement.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, basement band. So then I was a bass player, and then there was a friend of mine.
And oh, you're in demand because everybody wants to rock the guitar.
Yeah. So it was a really funny period because there was a drummer who lived down the street, Eddie, and then he brought his kid over. He was an older guy. So then he knew all these guitar player guys. So there was this, like, all these real character guitar player guys who wanted to come over, and just weird, Eddie and I were the rhythm section, and they just wanted to do, you know, Deep Purple and Robin Trower covers.
But at least you're fucking playing. Whenever you play, you're getting ready. You're invested in the next time you play.
It was tons of fun. It was tons of fun.
Look, I want to play. You gave me some more pathetics. We gotta find out about the pathetics.
He runs up the stairs two at a time. His hand skims the banister. His small boots leave dirt. His mother calls from the kitchen, but he doesn't answer. He needs to find something in his room. The one thing that will prove to his friend he isn't a liar. He looks in plastic bins filled with action figures and trading cards, but it isn't there. He looks under the bed where he stuffs unfinished homework and soiled clothes he doesn't want his mother to find. He opens the closet door, and there's so much stuff. Boxes and suitcases rammed into piles. Outgrown coats. Cracked leather shoes. His father's old suits. Funeral clothes draped in tissue paper. That the act of looking becomes a mountain. The house becomes a mountain house, craggy and peaked, damp and smelling of old leaves and metallic water. He is lost here. He needs a path out of this damp, dripping place, threaded with black streams that lead deep underground. He climbs, and the way is steep, the earth loose and strung with thick roots. He finds a toehold on a boulder and drags himself onto a ledge. Breathless, he scrambles for a vantage, loses his balance and tips forward on sheer, glistening rocks.
Thank you.
Waka Pedro Show, that chunk of music started with Pathetics. I hate rockers, but not ones that do Robin Trower covers. No, Pathetics ain't in the picture yet, right? This is still Michigan. And Jaded Azurite's brand new. An adult in his own house is also a child. SLW, CC Watt, Iowa City, POW. The Myriad Ones, Dubuque, both Iowa. Samsara Rewind. John Duncan, Stefano Pelia, The Sellout, from their two-for record. Tim Wholehouse, Live, Broken Bones. Clang Quartet, brand new album from Scotty, Christian Mass, finally hand-sewn Potker with Tragic Elevator. Back to Mick Goldwater. As you know, learning music by being a rhythm section to older rock and rollers. In the basement.
Yeah, that was a great experience. I mean, it was like Eddie was a few years older. He knew some people, and they would just, it was a constant stream of like this, you know, guys bringing their amps in and just jamming for hours and hours.
Usually the practice pad's going to be the drummer, so you don't have to keep tearing down and setting up. Yeah. And
well, I don't think his parents were down on, you know, having a bunch of random guys come over and jamming for hours. It was a little looser at my house.
Oh, so it was in your basement?
It was in my basement.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you need a copacetic sitch. Okay. Did this band ever, did it get a name? Did it ever do gigs?
Actually, I think we played like a graduate. Actually, you know what? Yeah, I remember now. Actually, we got a guitar player, a steady guitar player. Then we did a bunch of covers. I don't think we had a name, but we did like Johnny Thunder's covers and Dead Boy's covers and stuff like that. And we played like a one high school graduation party.
Was it a success?
I think so. I think a lot of people may be alienated by it.
But you didn't get hit with any batteries or bricks. Or
no. It was a pretty small affair.
In the city, I got hit with batteries at a opening up for Flipper at that place, the 10th Street Church. Well, tell me about Pathetics. What is the gap between this no-name band and the Pathetics?
It kind of maybe overlapped. I think I was at a music store with a buddy who was an older guy who had a car. You know, I wasn't driving. I was still really young. And then I was checking out basses at the music store, and this guy goes, "Hey, you play bass?" And I went, "Yeah." He goes, "Let me see." And, you know, I was like, "Do do 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 do." He goes, "Hey, you want to join our band?" So that's when I joined.
Wow. Just like that, huh? Fuck.
Yeah, the guy was like, "Whoa, you can play." So that's how I joined the Pathetics. But luckily, let's see, I got somehow, you know,
Mick,
when you're
you
young,
know about,
younger, you
did you know about the Pathetics before you joined them?
I didn't know anything about them.
Okay.
Yeah, and then somehow I got I had that PB head. And then I got an empty trainer bottom.
Rod Astin like trainers.
Yeah, but it was like this really cool, it was like a folded horn 18.
Oh, I remember those.
It was a cool cabinet, but it didn't have any speakers, so I went and got a Radio Shack 15-inch speaker and built like another mount.
And I like
it. Over.
I like this. If something comes up, you get to it, man, and you fucking manhandle it. I like this.
Yeah, so I found like there was like a jigsaw in my garage, and then I cut it out and it then made a new plate to stick over the 15-inch speaker to go over the 18-inch like hole.
Yeah, did it fire upward or rearward? Or forward, because of...
It's a rear firing...
Yeah, yeah, because they have it go through the chamber to get an extra octave.
Yeah, it was, like, super bassy. That thing sounded so good. And then it sounded unique because I put a 15-inch instead of the 18-inch, so it had a real sweet sound to it.
Also, you had to change the hole. That's why you had to put that piece.
Yeah, I had to put, I just got a piece of plywood, and it's... I had, I got a jigsaw, and just cut a hole out, and just kind of Frankenstein put it together,
Adapter. Frankenstein, that's where they got the title of that song, because it was really 45 minutes. They cut it all up and turned into an AM radio single with a drum solo, a hit. Look, what was it like playing with the Pathetics?
Well, they were already, kind of had songs and already had, already playing out, but they had this really flaky bass player, and so he really wasn't into it, so they kind of got rid of him. And then I met the guitar player at a music store.
Right,
and he saw me playing bass, and he goes, "Hey, you want to be in a band?" And I go, "Yeah, maybe. Let's see you play bass." And I was grabbed the bass off the wall, started playing. And then he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Here's my number." So they were. I was in high school, and those guys were all in college.
And
so
they're not copying songs, right? They're writing their own tunes.
Oh no, it's all original material.
Yeah,
I think they did. I think they maybe had a couple funny. Funny cover. I think they did. We did.
Yeah, everybody
climb,
did that.
Climb Every Mountain from The Sound of Music.
But it wouldn't look like a straight cover. You're fucking.
No, no, it was really fast. Really.
Do you remember your first Mick, do you remember your first Pathetics gig?
They were already gigging. They had
no your first Pathetics gig.
Oh. My first Pathetics gig, they were kind of playing out. There was a place called Nunzio's that we used to play a lot. We were playing out a lot, maybe a couple times a week.
Yeah, but I want to know about the first one.
You know what? I don't remember that.
Okay, that's okay. What's your favorite gig?
We used to play this.
What's your favorite gig that you did with the Pathetics?
I don't know. We were kind of like a house band at this place called Nunzio's, and we just would play there. Sometimes we were playing like three times a week. or Bookies, the famous Bookies Club in Detroit. We'd play there. So it was like Nunzio's, Bookies. Yeah, we were playing a lot.
Tracks. Do you remember
Tracks.
Place?
Yeah, played some shows there. I was in other punk bands after that and played Tracks.
Well, we're getting to it because we ran out of time. First hour, June 5, 2021, special guest, Mick Goldwater. Hold tight for hour two. June 5, 2021, second hour, Walk for Pedro show.
No one wants to hear your series of explanations about how hard things have been for you. Toxic, symbiotic, grieving, grieving, not gleaned the true substance from my curated feed. I've turned, you've turned, and now we're facing in opposite directions. Take up thy walking stick and hobble. No one wants to hear your series of explanations about how hard things have been for you. Toxic, symbiotic, grieving. Take up thy walking stick and hobble.
Thank you. sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. The hatred which divides nation from nation, race from race, class from class. Father, forgive. The covetous desires of people and nations to possess what is not their own. Father, forgive. The greed which exploits the work of human hands and lays waste the earth. Father, forgive. Our envy of the welfare and happiness of others. Father, forgive. Our indifference to the plight of the imprisoned, the homeless, the refugee. Father, forgive. The lust which dishonors the bodies of men, women and children. Father, forgive. The pride which leads us to trust in ourselves and not in God. Father, forgive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show starting the second hour off with the Heresy. Morning after, then Dead Salter out of Tasmania with Defeat. Lucas Abella from nearby Sydney. Foggy Boogie. Some boogie. For your fog hat, your Savoy Brown. Matt Nelson. There's some bass guitar for you. Judge Judy. Heinbach. Forgive. Bombas Prendon. Churning Through Silkworms. Manuel Amito with Silo Up for Grabs. And finally, the Heresy. Betrayed Generation. Now, the Heresy is your band.
Yeah, that's a band I kind of started after, you know, after the Pathetics. Pathetics were kind of, they were older guys, and they were in college, and so there was like pre-hardcore.
Pre-necros?
Well, pre-hardcore as far as, you know, Detroit goes, you know.
You know, I had a guy on the show last month, Otto Booz, who made a whole documentary on this little scene that lasted maybe 6 months or something. And John, the singer of Negative Approach, is big time. And so is Ian MacKay. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And well, actually, I saw John Brannon, his band, before he was in Negative Approach. It was called Static. And they were kind of a... more like kind of a late 70s.
Yeah, because he liked Stooges and Alice Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's not these kids. He's got hardcore's more like kids, and John's more like our age or something. So tell me about the first. What was it like to put together your own band?
I think I was had. Well, that came a little later. I was always like a replacement bass player for the longest time. First it was the Pathetics. And then that kind of... Well, I was really young. All those guys were... I was still in like high school. And all the other guys were in college. And then the singer and the, you know, the classic, the guy gets his girlfriend pregnant and, you know, has to get a job. And so that band kind of fell apart. But the one guitar player and I, we kind of continued on with like the drummer, and we kind of did our own thing. That started getting more like kind of a hardcore, but more... like, more, like, jazz influence.
Well, like these tunes, you know, I played, Betrayed Generation, Morning After. Did you write those songs?
So that was Heresy.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking you about, the Heresy, because that's the band you started. I know about Pathetics now, but I want to learn about the Heresy.
Yeah, so Heresy, yeah, I wanted to start, like, a, you know, like a really heavy band. And, I wrote that stuff. And there was a drummer who an older guy who kind of lived near me. He ended up joining the band. So we were kind of like from the same neighborhood. So we kind of had like a lot of the same interests. So the guitar and drums, you know, that section of the band was, you know, kind of like the main part. And then, you know, with the songwriting too.
Now, were those
for Heresy?
Yeah. Now, were those songs you wrote in Heresy your first songs ever that you wrote?
When I was in that band, the Pathetics, when I was really young, I was like 15, 16, I didn't write any music.
Right. It was their band.
I was a replacement.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. Okay. You told me the next is Allied. So let's listen to some Allied.
you, John.
for Pedro show. Allied with Leave My Life Alone. And then Slang from Hokkaido with Air Raid Days. Born Shit Stirs, This Machine Kills Cock Blockers. If you listen real careful, you can hear a little bit of mind bass from me. These guys asked me to play with, so. And it's with the Split. The buddies are on the other side. Led Zepp, Viet Cong with Liquored Up. I think they're Gaijin. Foreigners living in Japan. And Victoria Shen after that with War Machine Online Noise Festival from Live, October 17, 2020. Finally, Allied into the 80s. So this must have been early 80s.
Yeah. After we recorded, the Allied recorded in Chicago with John Kesney from the Effigies.
That's where the City Lights was. I think it was in Chicago. Because we played with the Effigies of Black. Oh, my memories are sterile. Now, looking at the pictures, were you guys into, like, exploit? Well, maybe not them, but what was it? Crass or GBA?
Yeah, we're into, like, this British punk mainly. You know, it was kind of like...
Like Liberty things with the hair, right?
Yeah, I was like kind of like the spiky punk, and then the other guys were more into, there was kind of like a, with the Allied, it was kind of more like a oi influence too.
Okay.
An oi punk.
Okay. You know, John talks about that in that documentary, how he thought the hardcore scene in Detroit got ruined by guys trying to copy skinhead bands from over there.
I don't think we were like the only. We didn't try to.
No, you weren't skinheads though. You guys had more of the spike in the studs on your coats. I'm just looking at the pictures you flowed me.
Yeah,
and that got a cover of a fanzine and stuff like that. So, what was? Can you remember the first Allied gig?
The first. You know, I was like the replacement bass player.
Oh, okay. That
was a big. That was a big part of my music. Career starting out, I was always like the replacement bass player. Like with the Pathetics, I was a replacement bass player. With the Allied, I was a replacement bass player. And then later on, I kind of started my own band. They kind of overlapped.
Okay.
At the same time, I was in the Allied and that band was called Heresy.
Right, right. We already played some of that. So and we played some Allied too. So, did you write any songs in the Allied?
No, those guys, they had all the material already at hand. I was a replacement bass player, and it was an interesting thing with the Allied was the guitar player Pete, who was in Allied, was the original guitar player with Negative Approach.
Ah, John's band.
Yeah, and he was, like, childhood friends with John. They lived, down the street from each other.
Yeah, John, a great cat. One time, he let the Minutemen conk at his pad, and he gave us a poster of the Three Stooges to put in the back window of the boat. And he kept talking about this parrot on the coffee table, and we couldn't see the parrot. But we didn't say anything. We just kept drinking. Anyway, how long do you play in the Allied?
let's see, the timeline. Gee, I don't, you know, it was kind of like, I had that band, the Pathetics, and then it was the Allied, and then I had this band called Heresy, which was more of like, kind of a hardcore, like kind of a, more of like this universal kind of discharged influence kind
discharge.
Of band.
That's the band I was trying to think of. Discharge. And there was another one too. But I think these were U.S. guys. Crucifix.
Oh, yeah. They're from San Francisco.
They were in the city, right? Yeah, yeah. When do you get to the city? When do you leave Michigan?
In 89.
Okay. So there
wasn't much happening in Michigan at that time. And then I had a son, he's born in 85. So right when I got out of high school, I had a kid.
Oh, we're at the end of the second hour, June 5/2021, this Watt Pedro Show special guest, Mick Goldwater. Hold tight for hour two. June 5, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
Thank you.
for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with HDRNG guitar duet, and it's kind of mysterious. Mike Rignetta after that with Untitled, but then parentheses he puts for Lou, so it actually is titled. And Bullshit Detector with Airport Waves. Now, 1985, you have a son, Michigan.
Correct.
1989, you come west as far as the land goes. I-80 ends in the city. So do you start doing music as soon as you get?
Yeah, I think I kind of, well, there was so much like live music and, you know, then great record stores, things I did not have in back in Detroit. I think eventually kind of cobbled together some equipment and then joined some, you know, when you're a bass player, you can just, you're just kind of like, you kind of, you can jump into an already established band.
Yeah.
So that's what I did when I arrived to San Francisco.
And who did you first play with?
this guy was like a three piece. And there was a label, there was a 7-inch that was put out. I don't even have a copy of it I played on. But I was just kind of a replacement bass player in that band. It wasn't anything real significant.
What were they called?
4-point star or something like that. It kind of sounded like Mission of Burma, kind of.
Okay, okay.
It was kind of a big departure from what I was
doing. Oh, you played like Clint Connolly? Is that his name? Yeah, Clint Connolly. Good bassman. What happened after? Did you start your own bands?
Well, back in Detroit, after...
No, I'm talking about out west here.
No, it was kind of like a kind of infrequent thing. I mean, there was so much like good music going on.
Sure.
That, you know, I was just like, you know, going out, collecting records, listening to stuff. I had a brief period.
Can I ask you when you met Grux?
yeah, I had moved into a warehouse, had an opportunity to move into a warehouse, and then somehow some of the people who lived there knew him, and then he wanted to come get involved and try to do some things there try to do Carolina gigs in the warehouse. And so that's how I met him. And then we started goofing around together. And and then he already had this like other, he had multiple bands at that point. And then, So with Rubber O Cement, there was it went through a couple different lineups, but then it kind of solidified with he and I, and then there was another infrequent guy in the group, but finally it just came like stripped down, he and I, this Grux and I.
Okay, I want to play, you gave me, or your buddy gave me, 3 Rubber O Cement tunes, so let's listen. Thank you. For Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Started the chunk off with Rubber O Cement doing 2020 Vision with two S's. And then Sigoti, Hurricanes of Distortion, three Tuscans and Tullum. Rubber O Cement after that with track 10, which probably ain't its real name, it's just CD. And then Troopa Troop out of Danzig, Poland, with Another Day. Finally, track 11. Probably not its real title. Rubber O Cement. What was the first Rubber O Cement? You know what? I might have done a gig with him that he called Rubber O Cement here in SoCal. And it was because you sent me a picture of these two trippy-ass basses that have big, they're mounted on rails. I played one of those with him. I tried to.
Oh, yeah. I remember that gig, yeah.
Oh, were you there?
Yeah.
Oh, were you playing with us?
Well, yeah, I built the basses.
Okay, because I know about Rainbow Caroliner a little bit, and we even did gigs with them in the old days, but I didn't know anything about Rubber O Cement. And the whole thing was a trip. I was really glad to be part of it. That was such a trippy gig. It was... One of the most awkward things I did, you know, I like to play every Halloween with a costume on, and it was sort of like doing that.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, you're like, gave you the bass and the costume, you're like, huh? Yeah, you know, just do it.
Yeah. I mean, there was no ego involved or anything. I wanted to do good for you guys, and I didn't exactly know what to do. But then it was just be yourself, you know, or deal with this sitch. What about the first time you played with Grux, Rubber O Cement?
Well, we had some mutual friends, and, you know, he's such a, you know, character, really unique person. And I think maybe it was somebody who was having, you know, people were coming over to eat food or something like that. And then we're just kind of like hanging out and we're talking about music. And then somehow, I don't know, somehow we end up coming up with some kind of arrangement to start playing together. And I think that was like the beginning of like another version of Rubber O Cement.
So you're saying it's kind of organic thing. It's about people, right?
Oh, yeah. It's about people and like, you know, sharing this interest and like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah, that's the greatest thing in the world. Fucking, that's what art's about, really. Music's part of that. So what are you doing right now, Michael, musically?
Everything's kind of like on hiatus right now, but there's another guy I play with infrequently. I think there might be some tracks on there that we sent you. Rubber O Cement still doing stuff.
Do you do the thing like use the internet to trade files?
No, I don't do that.
So you got to be in the room with the dude to fucking make music, right?
Yeah, we just usually recording is like, you know, set things up, all right, get some stuff down, and then he runs off and we'll edit it and slice and dice it.
You're still working the bass, though, right? You built those basses when I played. Did you ever get into 5-string, 6-string, that kind of stuff?
No, bass was my first instrument when I was in Detroit with the sure. Pathetics. And because everybody wanted to play guitar, so I thought, well, if I play bass, I probably have more chance to play with people. So I was kind of like, at an early age, I was kind of like in demand with playing with people.
No, I understand that, but what about this idea of 5-string bass, 6-string bass, 7-string bass? Are you into that?
I never played. I kind of goofed around with them at music store. Actually, the one I really thought was really cool was the 8-string bass.
Mick, it's been great to have you on the show. And as a fellow bass player, I had to ask you a question like that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, people, it's been June 5, 2021 edition of WAP Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.